Unit 38, that's a 2-1, the TAP 36. Copy, it's 1-4, show us on route, ETA 2 minutes.
Welcome to Running Code, the podcast where you, the listener and the viewer, get to know a little bit more about us, the men and women of the Newport News, Virginia Police Department. Hello, Melissa. Nice to see you as always.
Hi, Morgan. How are you?
I'm superbly well. Thank you very much. Got my allergy medicine. Finally breathing. The pollen is not bothering me too much.
I'm glad it's not bothering you because it is definitely bothering me.
Is it really? Well, listen, before we begin, Melissa, I want to cover something of great importance. I noticed that you are not wearing your traditional New York Yankees shirt. You're wearing another team. What happened?
Wow. I lost a bet. I can't believe you put me off the street like that.
You lost a bet.
I did. My kid is diabolical. But he got me. You win this time, Liam.
That's right.
But we're not going to talk about it anymore.
That's right. Liam, mom's always a winner, no matter what. All right. So let's get into this podcast. I'm very excited about our guest today.
Yes. We've got a pretty integral part of patrol sitting on the panel with us today. You want to introduce yourself, let everybody know who you are and what you do?
All right. So my name is Terrence Dunbar. I'm currently assigned as the precinct commander for South Precinct and Patrol Bureau.
All right. So you are. So your team is 33.3% of patrol.
Roughly. Give or take a couple of percentage
points.
That's
a lot of bodies to be responsible for.
Yeah, that's a lot of folks. So that's a heavy lift at times.
It can be at times, just like any other position. And each one has its challenges. I would say patrol is not unique in that. So
gratifying, though, I imagine, as the commander of a precinct.
It is, because the things that we do are immediately noticed as investigations and like support services. A lot of times the things they do, they takes a while for them to see the results of that. We see the results of what we do every day when dealing with citizens out in the public.
So. Right. So let's scoot on back, shall we? Let's scoot on back to the beginning of Terrence Dunbar. Where are you from originally, Terrence?
So I was born in Little Rock, Arkansas, but I pretty much grew up in Oklahoma and Tulsa area.
Okay.
So I lived there until I was 18 years old, and I joined the military, United States Army.
There it is.
And they took me all around the globe.
I landed
here in Newport News, Virginia.
At some point. So you are you an Oklahoma Sooners fan then? Football?
No, not really.
Not so much.
Not really. Not really.
Not so much. Not
because I don't appreciate the team. It's just I'm not a fan of football in general.
Very good. Mm-hmm. So you joined the military at what age?
18 years old.
So you were a lad when you joined.
Yes. Right out of high school.
And
I actually joined the military when I went back in the days of yore. So you're allowed to do early entry. So I actually enlisted in the summer break between my junior and senior year. So
wow.
I actually enlisted when I was 17 years old, and then I actually went off to basic training after my senior year in high school.
Wow.
And which branch of the military did you join?
The United States Army.
Sir. Proudly so?
All right.
Yes, sir.
That's right. Wow. And so you end up going to your schooling, right? Your basic training. And then from there, where does it take you?
Wow. So I had an interesting career, some of it by choice, some of it not. I thought I wanted to be a mechanic. So that's what I enlisted to be a vehicle mechanic. So I went to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, for basic training, Tank Hill. And then I went to initial entry training, AIT, advanced entry training there also at Fort Jackson. And then from there, they sent me to Germany. So I was in Kaiserslautern, Germany for 2 years and then came back to the States and then realized that working on trucks really wasn't what I really wanted to do. I was like, well, but I still love mechanics, so I went into the aviation field and became an aviation mechanic. And then I worked my way up the ranks there until that culminated into me being assigned here at Fort Eustis as a branch manager for the Aviation Logistics School for the Avionics and Electronical branch, and then I retired from there in 2005.
How many years did you serve?
20 years and 23 days.
Oh. Not that you were counting.
Not that you were counting. Yes, sir.
Right. Well, thank you for your service.
So you started with the mechanical side of helicopters, correct? You started with the mechanical sides of tanks, and then you work your way up to the electronic side of helicopters?
So it's interesting the way the aviation field works, I went into mechanics of aviation, being a crew chief where you work on the aircraft. the aircraft that I went to school for, it's funny, you know. So we're getting ready to graduate from the school, and they say, hey, guys, you're going to be the last class to go through this school because the manufacturer stopped making this aircraft.
They're not going to make them anymore.
Okay, that's reassuring. Jeez.
I was like, okay, wow. So what's going to happen to me? And so I get transferred from here, Fort Eustis, at school. I go to Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Okay.
So the aircraft that I was trained to work on was the Grumman OV-1. Which is a surveillance aircraft. It's for intel units. So I get to Fort Bragg, and it's like, there's no intel units at Fort Bragg. So now I'm nervous, like, what am I going to be doing here for next? I don't have a job. So I'm driving around and going to different airfields. Hey, where are the Mohawks? Where are the Mohawks? Like, I think they're over here. I go, no, those are Blackhawks. And where are the Mohawks? Like, we don't have Mohawks. I'm like, oh, this is going to suck. And then I get a call from the in-processing session. They say, hey, you guys come over here. And I go down and say, hey, you're lucky son of a gun. You're going to the Golden Knights. I'm like, what's the Golden Knights? So you don't know what the Golden Knights is? Like, no. So the Golden Knights is the United States Army Demonstration Parachute Team. So basically, you just do air shows. So they go around. It's a part of the United States Army Recruiting Command. It's just, they're basically professional air skydivers. So I was assigned to that unit for 4 years as a crew chief, crewing those aircraft.
Amazing gig.
It was, but all the good things come to an end. Like I said, the aircraft that I was trained to work on didn't exist anymore. So now I had got mandatory reclassed. So basically say, you're going to go be this. So they told me I was going to be an aircraft electrician, and that's how I got into the electrical side. So I came back to Fort Eustis again, got retrained to be an aircraft electrician, and then the way the special components of field works is that as you move up the ranks, you become responsible more and more. So as a electrician, I'm in charge of electricians, but when I become staff sergeant, now I'm responsible for the electricians and the avionics techs. Wow. And then when I became a sergeant first class, now I'm responsible for everybody that works on every component of the aircraft.
Wow.
So you're responsible for the guys work on the airframe, the guys work on the powertrain, the guys who work on the hydraulic system. So the entire aircraft, you have to go back to school, learn how those people do those jobs, so that you can supervise them and run an entire shops section of a aviation unit.
Fascinating.
So being in charge of large sums of people is not new for you, is it?
No, it's not. And it's kind of interesting in that respect. We're coming into this field, and I remember I got hired by Chief Fox, and one thing he asked me, he goes, "Is that going to be a hard transition for you, coming from a leadership position?" And coming into where you're basically going back to the bottom.
Starting over again.
Yeah, and I remember my response to him was that it's been my experience in life that people who can't take orders shouldn't be given them.
Wow.
That's brilliant. Absolutely. Spot on. So I guess I should ask this, military career, 20 years, 23 days, was police on your radar at some point? Was it a sudden change? How'd that work out?
Actually, it was. So, that first enlistment, when I realized I didn't want to be a truck mechanic anymore, and I was deciding on what I wanted to do, and I went into the military knowing I was going to be a career soldier. I knew I was going to stay for 20 years. So MP did appeal to me, and I was like, you know, I think I want to be an MP. So I had all the qualifications, I thought. So I went to the reenlistment and said, I want to be a military police officer. And they're like, no, sir, you're a little too short.
What?
And I was like, but I see MPs on post about my height. Say, sorry, you can't go. There's a height restriction, 5'8". Didn't make it. So being an inquisitive person I am, I called the branch manager for the military police at the Pentagon. It's like, hey, what is this thing about I can't be an MP because I'm too short? And he said, well, it's conditional. It depends on how we are in staffing. He said, "If we're understaffed, we don't care how tall you are. But
wow.
if we have enough MPs, we're balanced. Then we put in this height restriction. And unfortunately for you, sir, we got enough MPs right now."
Oh, the timing!
So I'm
like blown away.
That, right? Yeah. Wow!
But had I been tall enough, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you
that part,
folks right now.
That okay. part. It always happens for a reason.
Yeah. So we won on that deal.
Yes.
And NPD won on that deal.
Yes.
Good for us. Good for us. So military police. You transition into the world of I guess, civilian law enforcement, if you will, for a lack of a better term. You apply. How soon after you applied were you sit in an academy?
So I retired on a Wednesday, and Monday I was in the academy class. It all went really fast for me. I remember I went, when I applied, we were still in the 2600 building on Washington Avenue.
Yes.
And I remember I was walking downstairs, getting ready to get in my car, wondering how my interview went. And Lieutenant Valerio at the time called me as I was getting in my car and offered me the job. So I didn't even make it into my car before I was offered the job. And then the next Monday, I was sitting in the classroom.
Right. Now, the fascinating thing is that later on in your career, you end up working in recruiting.
Actually, I don't know if you recall or not, but when I first got as a brand new officer, I was a auxiliary recruiter working for you when you were assigned in there.
Wait a minute. We were together, yeah.
Auxiliary recruiter?
Yes. That used to be a thing.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
You want to explain it, Terrence?
Yes. You would take newly hired officers or even career officers, and they would come in and go to recruiting events. I remember I went to one at Langley Air Force Base.
That's correct.
We would send officers out to recruiting events, and just as the name implies, they're auxiliary recruiters.
Got it.
Yeah, and then later you came back as the recruiting sergeant.
I was a lieutenant.
The lieutenant. You were actually a training sergeant and then the recruiting lieutenant.
And then came back again as the captain.
As the captain of it, yeah. I mean, talk about full circle.
Yes.
A couple times.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've had a very good career, would you say?
I would say I have a fairy tale career. Yeah. I've been blessed to be able to work in almost every area in this police department, every section. I worked in all three precincts. I've been in training. The only position that I wish I had an opportunity to do would have been to work in internal affairs, just to gain a broader perspective of policy, procedure, and how it implies with liability with the agency in the city. And I would have loved to have been a motor officer.
Yeah, because motors are your passion, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's your off-duty gig.
Hey.
That's right. That's why you're wearing the t-shirt.
I think I have seen you on that bike in the city. Wait, can I call it a bike? Is that
it's okay?
Is that the right? Okay, all right. I don't know the terminology.
No, yeah.
So I guess moving into that in that direction, what does Terrence Dunbar do off duty to kind of decompress, relax?
Most of the time, I spend working in my yard. I love doing yard work. That's because no one ever bothers you while you're working in the yard.
I know I wouldn't.
I've noticed that. That's
I know I wouldn't.
A place of solitude. They try to stay away from you.
That's great.
But when I'm not working in the yard, I do love riding my motorcycle. And then, as you know, Morgan, I recently purchased a car that I've wanted for years, and now I get to drive that and actually join the club. And got my membership card a couple of days ago in the mail, actually.
Did you get the card?
Got my
and what club is that, Terrence? Porsche, announce it to the world.
Porsche Club of America.
Yeah. And I used to belong to the Fiat Club of America when I had my Fiat 500.
Listen, goals.
Great car.
I'm sitting up here on the stage. Goals. I love it. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Love to hear it.
Yeah. Now, you've worked with Terrence before as well, yes? We both have?
I think we both have, yeah.
Yeah. In a variety of different, really in a variety of different, I guess, divisions and units and so forth. Now, did you know this? I might stump you here, Melissa.
Oh, boy.
Did you know that Terrence Dunbar was on an episode of Cops?
Yeah, I do know that.
Did you know that?
I did see that episode.
Terrence, tell us a little bit about that.
So, it was interesting.
That's a good way to put it.
To say the least. First they came to us, and at the time I was the sergeant for the North Hip Unit.
Yep.
And the guys came here to do the show Cops. And I know previously there was some issues with them riding along with officers, and we were all a little apprehensive because we didn't know how we were going to be portrayed on the show. So we were told, hey, listen, they're going to be riding with you guys, with hip guys. I'm like, wow, this is going to be
here
fun.
We go.
Here we go. But you know what? That was probably, they rode with us for about a month to get about 5 minutes of footage. But it was... Those guys are so interesting. It was, I could have sat and listened to these guys like for months about all the stories they had. Their lives are way more interesting than ours. The things that they have done, the things they have witnessed, and the things, it was amazing to ride with. And just to see their passion for what they do and how they do it. And mad respect. What do people really, when we're in foot pursuits, they're running with us.
Keeping up.
Carrying a camera.
Right.
Wearing ballistic protection. And and sometimes they would outrun the officers.
And keeping it in the frame. I'm quite certain that's got to be a little difficult while you're running.
Right.
I've never understood how they can do that.
It was interesting that ride along was one of the cameramen was telling me there was one agency they were riding with, and they responded to a call, and it was, I forgot, it was like a maybe like a burglary suspect or someone had committed some crime. And they got out, and they got into a foot pursuit, so he's running with the officer. At some point, the officer got winded.
Okay.
The cameraman kept running, following the suspect.
Really?
Got the location, went back and got the officer and showed him where the suspect was. Keep in mind, the cameraman is carrying the camera
and
wearing the ballistic protection, and he's out with
it. That's incredible.
But I did find out why they were in such good shape, because I asked them, so what do you guys do? So they go to these locations, they stay there for a month or so, then they go back. And he's like, yeah, he goes, basically, I have nothing else to do. So they're basically just fitness gurus. They, when they get done with the day, they go back, they get all the footage, they send it back to the headquarters, they edit it down. And there's a lot of editing going on.
Oh, sure.
They edit the information down and it comes out. And then once it's edited into the segments, and it's all 7 minute segments, and then they determine what's going to go out to get broadcasted and what ends up on the cutting room floor. But it is interesting in that reality TV is not a lot of reality. And it would get frustrating at times, because if you notice on cops, you notice they never stopped at red lights.
Oh,
you ever realize that?
Interesting. Yeah. No, I didn't.
Yeah. I didn't either.
Yeah, that's intentional. So if you're in the middle of a conversation, if they're recording, and you come to a red light, you have to start that conversation over again.
Oh, wow.
Interesting. In unison.
Okay. Oh, wow.
That's interesting. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, for the... Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
And if you ever wonder how they get out of the back of a secure police car and keep up with you doing a foot pursuit, you ever wonder what it is?
How do they get out? Because it doesn't open from you.
They don't. The foot pursuit is filmed after the foot pursuit.
Wow, fascinating. Secrets. Secrets coming out.
Yeah, so if you're like, how did they film the cop getting out of the car starting to run?
Right.
Because that was after
that
the
foot pursuit.
That's fascinating. So
they double back. And
Even if they were to wait to the next day, because if it was shot during daytime, you go back to that locale the next day
and
they show you
it.
Jumping out of the car, running and chasing somebody that you caught yesterday.
Wow. Well, I have to tell you, I ended up meeting them, right? Because I was working midnights at the time as a lieutenant, and I met the crew, the entire crew, and they were very nice. I mean, they were very, very nice. And I remember it was my daughter's birthday, and I was telling my wife, you know, hey, cops crew is here. They're visiting, so forth and so on. She's like, where are they staying at? I said, they're staying at a hotel somewhere. I'm not sure. Are their families with them? No, I don't think so. She's like, hey, what, you want to invite them to our daughter's birthday party?
Aww.
And my wife, and I said, sure, okay. We ended up inviting the entire cops crew that was here for my daughter's birthday. So we're in the backyard with this big picnic tables and the entire cops crew back there. And they were so genuinely thankful that they got a nice meal, and just great people. And we enjoyed the heck out of them. So
yeah, they were great people.
Yeah, very nice. Hey, how are we doing on time there, Matt? Are we on target, sir?
Yeah, we're doing fine. I was curious hearing about the story about the Golden Knights. Were you one of the ones jumping out of the aircraft, or were you the one that was that was sort of instructing people what to do and overseeing the whole operation?
No, it was my job to make sure the aircraft was in perfect running condition so that no one had to jump out. But out of morbid curiosity, so I did my 4-year tour. It was coming time for me to leave, and I had my scheduled date to go to school to learn how to be an aircraft electrician. So I went to the commander. I said, you know what? I want to do a jump. So
you did,
really?
So they trained me up, you know, because all the guys signed the unit are all jump masters, so they're all, you know, trainers. So they trained me up how to do a static line jump, so not the free fall, but my static line jump. So funny enough, so the aircraft that the Golden Knights use is not really designed for parachutists, meaning it doesn't have a blast shield. So a blast shield is just a shield that's on the side of the aircraft that deflects the wind, so that when you get out, when you go out the door, it's not like a Bugs Bunny cartoon where you're like, whoosh, you're gone.
Right.
So So
and, that totally and, made sense to me.
Absolutely.
And the door is significantly wider than it is for a parachute, like a design aircraft like a C-130, where you can grab both sides of the door. So and we had two demonstration teams, a gold team and a black team. So my favorite guys are the black team because they were just a good group of guys to hang out with. So the team leader was a guy named Paul. So Paul was going to be my jump master for that jump. So we get up there, altitude, we're at 4,000 feet. So and I get in the door, and you can't hear, really. You kind of gotta read lips trying to hear. You know, the wind's going by 100 miles an hour. You're standing in this doorway, right? So and so the jump master job is to make sure you're lined up on the run so that when you land on the jump zone and not somewhere else. So I'm looking at Paul to get my signal to go, and he's making you know, movements with his mouth, but I'm not sure what he's saying because he's talking to me and he's also talking to the air crew to make sure the aircraft is lined up. So I'm not quite sure if he wants me to go or not, and I don't want to go when I'm not supposed to go.
No.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting on him, trying to figure it out. And all of a sudden, I feel this push, and boom, I'm in the air. So, I can't get any leverage because I only got one hand on the door. So I get a push, and I'm outside the aircraft. So we get on the ground, and I'm talking to Paul, and it's like, dude, what's up with that? He goes, I told you to jump. I didn't hear you. I say, well, I'll tell you what, Paul, you have the distinction of being the only person to ever throw me out of my own aircraft at 4,000 feet in the air. But it was fun. I had a great time.
Yeah. So all these assignments that you've had within our agency, which assignment stands out most in your mind as enjoyable, gratifying, that kind of thing?
I'd say that one was, because that was more interesting, because there's a lot of traveling. That's the most fun thing about that job, traveling and then meeting people all over the country. And we even got to travel some places overseas. So it was a
really you've fun. Seen the world?
Yes. So I got to go to Korea a couple of times and went to Germany once. And then travel all over the inside United States with the Golden Knights. So yeah, wow. I had a interesting and fun-filled career.
Yeah. Yeah. So within our agency, what about assignments within our agency?
Wow. So yeah. Which, so and started off South Precinct.
Absolutely. And you came back. I came back as well. I love South Precinct.
Yeah. I've worked South Precinct in every position except for sergeant.
Wow. Okay.
I started off there as a brand new recruit trainee. Eventually made the HIP team. Then I went to Investigations in South, where I got promoted. Went to North Precinct, was a HIP team sergeant there in North Precinct for a while. Went to Organized Crime Division, worked the street team narcotics there. Went to training unit, I worked for you.
With
the training unit?
With, never for, with, always for, always with.
Then from training, got promoted to lieutenant. Back to support services, lieutenant, went to Central. Was it Central? Went to Central. Then went back to South Precinct as a lieutenant. Got promoted from lieutenant to captain. Went to North Precinct.
Yep.
North Precinct, went back to support services.
Yeah, you did.
And now I'm back to South Precinct.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, when you were in training, you were the range master. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And the interesting thing is it was at Fort Eustis, where you were in the military, right? Because we have a range at Fort Eustis.
Full circle.
You couldn't get away from that place, Terrence.
No, actually, it was when I went to the academy was at Fort Eustis.
Yeah.
And interesting enough, so when I joined the police department, I was still on terminal leave. So I was still active duty military for the first 45 days in the academy.
Wow.
Jeez.
Wow, incredible story.
You don't know how not to have a job, do you?
No, I don't. I've never had a day off in my life. So I'm sitting on use or lose leave right now as we speak. But it's funny, I ran into one of my sergeant majors at the gym because we used to work out at the PT field there. And I was, we're after PT, we were changing clothes, and I ran into one of the sergeant majors there in the gym. And he didn't realize I was out at the time. He's like, yeah, you got your packing in for Master Sergeant, right? I said, sir, I retired. I'm gone now.
I've been out a while now. Yeah. So leadership has always been, or the position leadership, holding a leadership position, I guess I should say, mm-hmm. has always been very important to you and leading others. I mean, you take that very, very seriously.
Yes. And I see that that comes mostly probably from the military, because with the military, it's not just a concept, it's a science. We have a non-commissioned officer education system, NCOES,
right.
Whereas every leader, whether you're commissioned or non-commissioned in the Army, you go to training specific to leadership to ensure right. that across the entire Army that there's one leadership concept, one leadership idea. If you ask any non-commissioned officer in the United States Army, what is the definition of leadership? Verbatim, they will all give you the same response.
Yeah.
So
wow.
that creates consistency in leadership,
sure. mm-hmm.
which for the military, you'd understand why that's necessary.
Right. Right. And you live the be no do philosophy, if you will. Yeah. Let's call it a philosophy, yeah, shall we?
But that's best because I learned that's what leadership is,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I try, and I did learn. sometimes the hard way that there are some unique differences too in leading soldiers and leading civilians.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And it was a learning process for me. Some things are universal, and then some things you have to apply
Adapt.
To your audience, right? You have to be able to adjust to the audience that you lead.
Absolutely. Yes. And obviously there's a certain amount of IQ that is required as a leader in both, but in the civilian world, EQ, right? Your emotional
intelligence
plays an
important
role when leading civilians. That's very important. And
right.
if you're a leader out there, and look it up, EQ is critically important to every mission, right? Especially when we're talking about people's feelings, right? That's a topic that sometimes comes up in the world of law enforcement, feelings, feelings, this, feelings, that. Well, my philosophy has always been, if you don't deal with people's feelings now, you're going to deal with them later when it gets out of control. Right? So
yeah.
deal
Come
with
back.
People's feelings. Feelings yeah. matter. People's yeah. feelings matter. And when you're leading somebody, you should keep that in mind.
Right.
But I digress.
Yeah.
I digress.
Right. And you cannot lead without
Absolutely.
Knowing that and understanding that, because as the old adage go, people don't care what you know until they know that you care.
That's
and,
exactly
and I found
right.
that to be oh so true with people that I lead. You know, and it's not because it's like I'm trying to, solicit something from them. I truly want them to understand that
yes
I do care about them as
Deeply.
A person. It's not about the job. It's about we care about you.
Absolutely. And we're very fortunate that we three have a chain of command, right, from the chief on down, that stresses continuously the importance of caring about the people in your charge.
Right.
That's mission critical.
Right.
So at the end of the day, I'm not out the one making the traffic stops.
That part,
that's right,
they are.
That's
so
right.
So this job does not get done without the men and women who are willing to come in and do those tough jobs.
Yep. And I believe firmly that when we as leaders understand that, it makes things that much smoother.
Indeed.
Indeed it does. Matt, should we go ahead and get into the rapid fire questions?
I think so. I think Captain will do well on these. What do you think?
I think he's going to do superbly well. Would you like to start, Melissa? How about you, Terrence? Are you good to go?
Rapid fire.
I have no idea what's about to happen.
That
but
part.
Go for it.
That part.
Okay, that's even better.
I'm just here for the ride.
Awesome.
All right. So the first one is thin crust, regular crust, or deep dish pizza.
Deep dish.
Deep dish.
Yeah.
I was
no.
a little excited when
You're
I said that.
Yeah. So I like thin crust pizza, but I recently discovered Detroit style pizza. Have you ever had it? It's kind of deep dish, and the sides, the inside of the deep dish, are really crispy. Almost have like a burnt kind of.
You
crust.
Find the most
yeah.
obscure
I know,
stuff. Detroit
I
has a pizza too?
Detroit
he's
style.
He's Italian. He should know every conceivable way there is to cook
yeah.
a pizza.
Very
Detroit
true.
Style. Now,
Very
Matt,
true.
Are you familiar with Detroit style?
I can't say that I've seen it.
Okay, well, you have to check it out.
I might have heard it once or twice.
Yeah,
you have to look it up.
And you're ready? Out of a food truck, a local food truck.
From like here?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to have to talk.
Oh, yeah, okay, we'll talk offline. Sounds good. All right, question number two. Here we go. What object do you lose or misplace the most?
I would have to say my phone.
That's me. How about you, Melissa?
and I'm going to have to tell the truth because I know Liam is watching, and he would clown me if I didn't tell the truth on this one. So I'm a girl.
Yes.
And I wear a uniform.
Yes.
I can't go to calls for service or go out to calls when my officers ask me to come out or whatever with a purse on my arm.
Right.
So I carry a small, like, wallet that sits in the top pocket of my uniform. We'll go out, not completely forget that that's where it is, but I have my purse, no driver's license, no credit card, no bank card. Right. And I'm always like, oh, we got to go back home. Yeah. And Liam will be like, Mom. And then I can't find it. And it's a whole thing.
Yeah. For me, it's my phone. And you know, we each carry two phones, right? On-duty phone, off-duty phone. Yeah. One of them is going to get misplaced. Yeah. And this is probably the question I ask my wife the most. Honey, have you seen my phone? And then she'll just go and point that way, and I'll walk over there and grab my
phone.
There
it is.
So, all right.
She saves the day. She's an angel.
I've made a lot of U-turns on my way to work.
Absolutely. To get that phone?
Yeah, to get that phone.
That's right.
All right. Favorite song?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I don't think I have a favorite song.
I'm struggling with this one, too.
Yeah, I'm struggling with this. I mean, I like so many different genres.
Right, if you gave me, like, a genre, I may be able to, I'd have to think about it.
Yeah, now, Terrence, you and I have something in common. We love to listen to smooth jazz while we work.
Yeah, so I have Amazon Music. And that's my favorite song is the last nice song I heard on the way to
absolutely.
Work. Absolutely. So I have it set up so that my car is set up to my Apple CarPlay. So my song is playing on my phone as I'm driving in, and then I have a Bluetooth speaker, HKM, on my desk. When I walk in the office, it just picks up playing.
Yeah.
Right, so I have my own little theme music going on all day.
It follows him around.
Yeah.
That's absolutely priceless. Yeah, and I have it on. As a matter of fact, Terrence, you've come to my office when I've been playing it, and yesterday you stopped by and I had smooth jazz on. I mean, it's wonderful to listen to it. I mean, it keeps me, what's the word I'm looking for? Grounded, calm, if you will.
Yes, so it's my happy place.
Absolutely, your happy place. All right, question number 4, city life or country life? Now, you're from Arkansas. You said originally from Arkansas.
Yeah.
Right?
I would have to say country life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is that, Taryn?
Solitude. I don't know. I guess something weird about me. I can enjoy being all alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can have fun all by myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah, just basking in solitude.
Yeah, enjoy the family, enjoy the friends.
No, I love my friends, however, love my family, but I can have fun all by myself.
He said all alone.
Yeah. Have you ever, have you all ever taken a day off from work and just been by yourself at the house, and it was just so peaceful? Honey, I want to qualify this. I love you very much. But it's so peaceful and tranquil, and you can do, go out in the yard, do something, come back in. I love that.
Yeah, so so recently me and my son, we went on a motorcycle ride, and because he rides too, and he was asking me, hey, Dad, you're part of a club? You ever ride with a club? I was like, no. I wanted to ride around with 40 other people. I would have bought a bus. So,
that's exactly
the
right.
Need for it to be a motorcycle. Yeah.
That's the whole point of a motorcycle.
Right.
Solitude.
Solitude. You and your son. Perfect. Yeah. Doesn't get better than that, right? Mm. I love it. Mm-mm-mm. Melissa, you want to hit the last question?
Sure.
Here we go.
Your idea of a perfect day.
Well, to be, I guess somewhat facetious, well, nothing goes wrong.
Enough said.
But actually... And a perfect day for me is when I'm able to make a significant positive difference in somebody else's life. So, and I think that's what attracted all of us to this profession, right?
Absolutely. No doubt.
We want to make a difference, a positive difference. And it doesn't always have to be something, we always picture ourselves, we have these grandiose ideas, we're going to come in, we're going to save the day, right? Put the cape on and all that stuff. But the reality is, every day, we have an opportunity to make a difference in someone's life.
Yeah.
However small that is. Unfortunately, in our quest to find these great adventures, we overlook the times we could have just taken a moment to just stop, say something to someone, some small gesture to make a positive difference in their life. So to me, any day can be a perfect day if I just take that time and find an opportunity to make a positive difference in somebody else's life.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just about asking somebody how they're doing.
I
never, ever know.
You don't know. And I think Chief Hires, who is one of the finest leaders that I've ever worked with, and I'll put it out there. I think that honestly said it best when he said every day he tries to add value to people's lives. And sometimes that's as simple as, hello, how are you doing? While, you know, you're at the car wash getting your car washed and you're sitting next to somebody that's getting their car washed and you just chat them up. I mean, it could mean life.
Yeah.
It could mean life. So I think that's a great way to wrap it up, Terrence.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I really appreciate you. You're such a stand-up guy. You know it. I'm so fond of you, man. I mean, you're A number one, man.
Feelings mutual, sir. And every time I walk away conversation with you, I feel like, yeah, I'm a better person after having that conversation.
That's
I always learn something talking to you, sir. I appreciate it.
Wow. Thank you, Terrence, and I feel the same. Melissa, we are all over the place.
Listen. And I know we did this yesterday.
Yeah.
But I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
The concept of why you need an iPhone. You know,
the iPhone. Yeah, so you want to tell them a little bit about that? I think that's so cool. I didn't know it.
I almost want you to tell them, but it's fine. I will go ahead and tell them.
Yeah, but I have an Android.
The app on the iPhone. Okay. The app on the iPhone for podcasts. If you type in Running Code, we're there. So if you have an iPhone, check us out. If you don't have an iPhone, we're on YouTube. Make sure you check the box at the bottom. Make sure you let us know you like us. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for coming.
Cheers, everyone.